Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of KCBX and its team of program hosts. Today on Central Coast Voices, join host Mario Espinoza-Kulik and his guests for a conversation to discuss pesticide exposure as a pressing public health and environmental justice issue here on the Central Coast. We're live today, and we invite you to listen, learn, and participate in our conversation Thursday between 1 and 2. Join the conversation and call in at 805-781-3875. Or after the program, you can email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. With that, let's join Mario and his guests. Over to you, Mario.
Thanks, Brad. Hi, everybody. Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik. Today, we're talking about pesticide exposure, public health, and environmental justice on the Central Coast. For many residents in agricultural communities, issues related to pesticides use impact their daily reality and health outcomes. This is tied to where people work, where they live, where their children go to school, and whether they can access clear information and meaningful protections. Today, for our show, we have two guests, Emma Eliezer Vega, Santa Barbara County Organizer for Californians for Pesticide Reform, and Casi Salazar, Guadalupe resident and retired teacher from Pajaro Valley Unified School District from Watsonville. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mario. It's great to have us. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Lovely. Well, if you're listening to us, please feel free to call in and ask a question to our guests. We have the number 805-781-3875 or email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. Emma, to start us off, please, could you introduce yourself in your own words and maybe share a little bit about what your role is with the Californians for Pesticide Reform?
Yeah, so thank you for having me. So my name is Emma Eliezer. I was born and raised in Santa Maria, California. I'm the granddaughter of farm workers. My parents were also a product of child labor in the fields. From there, directly, I graduated from Santa Maria High School, which directed me to go to UCSB, so University of California, Santa Barbara. And then from there, I did some internships that led me to learn about unions and nonprofits and their importance of how they affect the community. So I did last summer an internship at the UCSB Labor Center. And from there, I was fully immersed into what unions and nonprofits here on the Central Coast. And I was placed at MICOP, which is the Mixteco Indigenous Community Organization Project, and CAUSE. So here, and I worked on their campaign Alianza Campesina, which was fighting for a living wage for farm workers. And that's where I got introduced to the fight that our farm workers are going on here in the community, but not just for a living wage, but, you know, for their health. So that's, and then coming from a background, our farm workers, I found a way to come back and get back to my community, so that's why I'm grateful. And then ended up from there post-summer. In November last year, I started my position as community organizer for Californians for Pesticide Reform. I was recruited, and then from there I did my training, and we kind of got involved here in the community, especially here on the Central Coast, as Guadalupe, statistically, it's in a red area because it's surrounded by fields. I know Santa Maria, back then, if you go back a couple years ago, it was mainly fields, but it's slowly being transformed like a community without agriculture. So coming to Guadalupe, my goal overall is to bring awareness to the pesticides being used to, whether you're a parent, a student, or a teacher, to bring awareness so you know how to report it and you know your symptoms, you know, so you could take care of your health.
Awesome. Thank you. And Casi, how about yourself? Please, if you might mind sharing a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with the project.
Okay. My name is Casi Salazar, and I'm a descendant of a farm worker, Macario Salazar, who came to work here in Guadalupe and in Watsonville in the late 40s. And I went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, a social science major with a Spanish minor, and I definitely went a little bit back to my area in Los Angeles in Santa Fe Springs for to teach in parochial school. But then later I returned to go work in Watsonville, where I got my credentials in San Jose State. And actually, I met Mark Weller because I was a migrant teacher at the end and used to host meetings for parents. and Mark Weller introduced us into the dangers of the pesticides. And I myself am a victim of breast cancer, and I definitely feel that in our school we had a lot of problems with learning disabilities, a lot of meetings to help out with these children, and definitely I now returned as a retired teacher to live in Guadalupe because I definitely love the Central Coast and do not want to go back to L.A. whatsoever. Anyway, that's a little bit of my background.
I'd love to hear it. We also have Daniel from SLO who would like to share his personal experience. Welcome on, Daniel.
Hi. Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I just wanted to give a personal testimony. I'm a bike commuter in San Luis Obispo, and there's been several occasions where I've been biking to work or wherever, and there's been people spraying pesticides like right next to the bike path, and I've got, it feels like mist from the sprayers in my face, and you know, as I'm riding. And actually the other day I was riding on the Madonna bike path to get to downtown, and there was a drone which was flying right next to me that sprayed glyphosate. I'm pretty sure it smelled like glyphosate right next to me, and a cloud of that kind of blew in my direction, and it was very dystopic, and I'm not a fan of that. So I'm wondering what we can do to pass legislation to prevent glyphosate and pesticide use in public spaces.
We appreciate the question, Daniel. Emma, do you want to tell us a little bit more about CPR or the California pesticide reform and how we can work together to solve these problems?
Yeah, so thank you for your question, Daniel. So far, right now, CPR, we're built of coalitions that we have allies, and we have organizers in Ventura, Tulare/Fresno County, Monterey/Santa Cruz County. And from there, we have coalitions of people coming together, and we make our voices heard. We have teachers, students, the youth. The youth is very important in this fight, but also anybody in the community that has fear or been exposed to this, have, like Daniel has, to come to these meetings and build a make your voices heard, because pesticide reform happens at state level, which means that at county level, at city level, your mayor or your board of supervisors, they don't have authority to make changes on the pesticide rules that for the agriculture, for the farmers here. So that means we as ourselves have to come together and we build, make our voices heard. And we have the EJAC, we have the Environmental Justice Adversary Committee. So like people like Daniel, he can make public comments at these events, and they're the ones that hold the state accountable. While they don't have the power to make decisions, they have the power to persuade DPR and the rules that they make coming forward in the next couple years. So that's the sad and difficult thing at pesticide reform, that all this happens only at state level, which means that we need a lot of people to come out and make public comment, and we need to show out as a community to like, hey, like, this is not okay. And for Daniel, if you have been exposed, you can go to your county ag commissioner's website, and you can send them an email and fill out a form and let them know that you've been exposed to pesticides, because just breathing it in and smelling it is a form of exposure. So if you had any symptoms, you can feel free to reach out to me as well, and I can connect you with people that can help you as well, or I myself can direct them as well. So for anybody that has been exposed to pesticides, just smelling it is exposure. And a lot of people don't know that, especially teachers and students, little bodies, they don't know that that's exposure, but it is. And I think more people need to be aware of that.
Daniel, did you have any other questions?
Yeah, can you repeat the name of the coalition and where I can find information to get involved?
Yeah, so you can reach out to us at CPR_Santa Barbara County, or you can go to pesticidereform.org there directly. You can reach out to us that way through social media, through or through our website. But the EJAC that I was talking about
CPR?
Is a yes, CPR. Okay. _Santa Barbara County. And you can reach out directly to me from there.
Wonderful. And your name is?
My name is Emma. Nice to meet you.
Emma. Beautiful. Nice to meet you. That's it for me. Thank you so much.
Thanks for chiming in, Daniel.
Appreciate you guys.
And Emma and Kasi, so that was such an important question, and also just sharing from Daniel. But I wanted to also ask about the broader mission of the California pesticide reform. Like, mm-hmm. what is it that they do across California?
We want to build a sustainable food system for everyone here. So that means from farmer to table, to make sure that you are aware of what you're consuming in your bodies. And yeah, so we want to make sure you're aware of what you're consuming in your bodies and how and where you're accessing it, right? Because as a right now, there's so much going on in the world that this is probably, if you think about it, one of your least of your worries, right? But it's something that right now, whether you think it might not impact you now, it will in the future, right? Because we have what we call acute and chronic symptoms. So like acute means you can experience them within 24 to 48 hours, right? And that those can be like red eyes, diarrhea, stomach aches, skin lesions, and then chronic in the future, the long run is cancer, right? So whether you think about if you're going to the grocery store right now, you might not think about what you're grabbing, right? But long terms, like you thinking about in the long run, what it took to get that food to your table, it's exposure, right? So whether you don't live in farm worker communities, you're exposed to pesticides. So if, for example, here on the Central Coast, it's agriculture here. So whether you're breathing it in, when your work environment, especially farm workers, they go to work in the fields, that most of them live in communities surrounded by fields, they come back and live in those situations. And their children, little bodies, they go to school in these surrounded by fields a lot of the times. And then most of them do after school activities and outside, again, being exposed to pesticides. And then they come home again, exposed to pesticides. So if you think it doesn't affect you, it does, because we all eat. We go to the grocery store and we buy produce, right? And then you can't fully wash away pesticides. I think in the report right now, one of the ones that have the highest concentration of pesticides was spinach. So to think about it, and then especially berries as well, your broccoli, your cauliflower, all those things, they use a lot of pesticides. And especially with children love berries. Yeah. So children love berries, right? And as much as you want to prioritize like a healthy diet for your children and family, sometimes we forget what it took for that to get there, right? And that in the long run is pesticides. What was applied to them, and you might not be aware of it. So I think it's good to bring awareness so you know the symptoms of it, because as a parent, I feel like this is something, you know, and it is something adding to your play as a parent, but I think it's important to be mindful, because if you have been exposed, we should say something. Right. So that way in the future when regulations come out, there's evidence and proof that, you know, people are getting sick and we have something to back that up with.
I'm Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. As we continue Central Coast Voices, our guests today are Emma Eliocer Vega, Santa Barbara County Organizer for Californians for Pesticide Reform, and Kasi Salazar, Guadalupe resident and retired teacher from Pajaro Valley Unified School District from Watsonville. For this next session, I want to focus on what Californians for Pesticide Reform is doing more in terms of the work and why it matters so much right now. Community organizing has helped secure important policy changes in California. Like, for example, you mentioned the EJAC, the Environmental Justice Advisory Committee, and Spray Days, which is a state notification system that alerts subscribers about planned pesticide applications in their area. If you're curious about any of these topics, you may call us at 805-781-3875 and ask questions for our guests, or email them to voices@kcbx.org. Emma, can you explain again in terms of these coalitions of how do we get our voices heard through coalitions across the Central Coast and the Central Valley?
Yeah, so CPR or Motive is definitely building people power, right? Without you guys, we wouldn't be able to move, make a movement, right? So the big thing we do focus on is coalition building, right? And then we give the power to the people, so we don't decide for them what gets done. You know, we listen to them, we go to them. They don't come to us, we go to them. And we listen out their frustrations, their worries, their pains, you know. I had a lot of people tell me, like, hey, my children have asthma. I don't open the window because of where I live because of the asthma attacks that my children have, right? So those are the type of comments and the parents, like, hey, come out and make your voices heard. It doesn't matter. You could be a grandparent, former retired farm worker. It doesn't matter who you are. If you were at some point have been affected by pesticide exposure, those are the people we're looking for, you know? Or if you care about this and you want to advocate for a community member or a person that can't maybe advocate right now, especially during hard times, you can advocate for them. So that's something we do forward. And then the other thing we do to bring more awareness is news conferences, news press conferences. And from there, those are the coalition building. From there, we bring them again to show that they have the power, and we uplift them. We don't do the work. They're the ones that bring all this awareness, and without them, again, we wouldn't be able to do any of this work. It's how I got connected with Cassie. Cassie is a former retired SAS member from Monterey County, which is SAS is Safe Ag, Safe Schools. It's been going on for a while. Our organizer, Yaneli Martinez, is the one leading that movement over there. But because of that movement, we have been able to replicate those positive changes over here as we have been expanding our coalitions. And now Cassie, as her as a former retired member over there, she's over here in Guadalupe advocating and letting people know, like, hey, of the positive changes that these communities create. And Safe Ag, Safe Schools, we didn't create that name. The people gave themselves that name, and that's how they wanted to be represented. And that's how I think that's something positive that we're doing here in the community, is that they choose how they want to be represented and what they want to represent.
Exactly. All I know too is that when I lived in Southern California, one of my cousins would ask me to come back and work there in Montebello and that area. And I say, why would I want to do that? Right now I'm facing the beautiful beaches. I face the beautiful mountains here in Watsonville. I'm not going to go back to the freeway when it's so full of smog. I spoke too soon. I was in the middle of a field that had pesticides and came down with cancer in my breast. So you have to realize too that all these things, really, we had so many children that when we used to have meetings in Salinas, people would come from all the way from Stanford and say that how many children there ended up in the hospital in Stanford. And they didn't realize that Watsonville was a small community. And why did they have so many children? The parents go and work in the fields, and they end up flying them over there because their little children are sick, and that sort of thing happened a lot.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that experience. It's definitely something that I don't think is too present in the minds of people, like, every day in their lives, unless they have a connection to an agricultural industry, like a family member working or having experienced what you bring up. We also have Erin from Los Osos who'd like to share her personal experience with us. Hi, Erin. You're on the line.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I'm completely on board with everything you guys are talking about. I worked in Pajaro as an elementary school teacher for over 12 years, and the cancer rates were so high. The migrantes having to work in the field, especially the strawberries, like all of that, it was so rough and hard to be a teacher because, you know, you had parents coming in and kids coming in, and it was horrible. And things need to change because that's not okay.
plus it goes windward, and so all the pesticides go into all neighboring areas. It's not, you know, it's not solamente Watsonville. It goes everywhere, and it's hard on people because they're working really hard, and they're going through everything, and it's amazing. And I, too, am a breast cancer, thankfully, thriving person, but I really feel that we do not do a service to our workers. You know, they bring all our food to us. It's not okay what they go through. And anyway, I just wanted to say that. But at my school, in the Pajaro district, the cancer rate is high for the teachers also, you know. It's not just the students. It's the teachers. It's everyone. And so we need to care more.
Definitely. So
thank you for sharing your experience with us, Erin. Really appreciate you calling in. Next, we're going to hear from Ken, who's from SLO and has something to share from other sources of exposure. Ken, you're on the line. I think I lost you, Ken. Let's talk a little bit more with Gassi and Emma. Gassi, you were sharing about your the experience of living in a place that has, you know, not as much exposure and things like that. I was interested to know, like, after your exposure, how does that change your life in terms of the food that you eat and, like, choosing, like, just does it change, like, everyday life for you?
Well, you know, living in a Mexican community, and you definitely feel you could eat whatever is available to you. And definitely I don't have any real diet of any kind. But I also know that later on I got a stroke. And thank goodness that that my friends took me immediately to the hospital. But this stroke, I didn't know it happened because of when we were locked down from the epidemic situation. But I also realized that coming to live in Guadalupe, right away, I came in July 2021, and the Santa Barbara would give you for your air inside a free thing to clean your air. And I thought, what's going on? This is kind of unusual, but it's also so you don't smell probably the pesticides, and I think that had a lot to do with that.
Yeah, I agree. We have Ken back on our line. Ken, welcome back.
Great to be with you. Thank you for the discussion that you're doing, and I, having been in agriculture most of my life, I can greatly appreciate the issues with handling agrochemicals, or for that matter, anything that can potentially make anyone sick, and when dealing with food products. One thing to take into consideration is literally since World War II, there's been hundreds of thousands of different chemicals that have come on to been invented that never existed previously. And that deals with all types of things that we're potentially exposed to, not just with pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, et cetera. And that is the reason why there's so much more cancer in the world than there was previously. But going back to the subject of exposure to pesticides, another source that I see is a lot of the commercial extermination companies, there's a lot of people that are using, whether it's termites or whether they're spraying for bugs, that are just too cowboy in how they go about their applications. And they expose people, particularly when they're doing application inside a dwelling, that make absolutely no sense to me in regards to the residues that's left in the home that exposes the occupants of that dwelling that make no sense. And I see this all the time. But one thing that I wanted to comment on is this particular spring is how few pollinators that we're seeing here in San Luis Obispo County. And as an active horticulturalist, I've seen this throughout the county, North County, South County, all over. And part of it is the climate, but I'm sure a big part of it also is that we've been making it a tougher and tougher environment for them. But I think that we all have to be careful with any time we handle any kind of fungicide, pesticide, or herbicide, and whatever the manufacturer says, don yourself up. There's no completely safe product. And, you know, look at glyphosate. It's still floor stacked at major stores, and it's the World Health Organization considers it a cancer product, proven. It's a known carcinogen, but yet you can go to Home Depot and see a floor stack of it. It's our government moves in strange ways. But be careful with any agrochemical that you work with, and be careful with whom you work with on any home application of any kind of compound. And that's my two cents.
Well, we appreciate you for calling and letting us know, Ken.
You're welcome.
We're going to take a short break to hear from our team, and we'll be right back on Central Coast Voices.
Thank you. And just a quick update here. You may have heard it's been going around that a federal judge recently ruled that the executive order targeting NPR and PBS violated First Amendment protections. And while this is a victory for editorial independence, the ruling doesn't restore federal funding to local stations like KCBX. Only congressional action could do that. So some folks are kind of confusing whether or not that funding will resume. And at this time, it will not. So to continue serving our community, we must raise an additional $420,000 every year. Let that sink in. We have to raise an additional $420,000 on top of what we already raise. So if you value the news, music, and information that you're hearing on KCBX, just like this half hour that we've just heard on Central Coast Voices and the half hour to come, why don't you please make a gift today at kcbx.org online. You can also do it by calling us at 800-549-8855. Your support keeps KCBX and Central Coast Voices on the air. And speaking of Central Coast Voices, it will continue in just about 30 seconds.
Hola, I'm Maria Hinojosa. Every Thursday afternoon at 2, you can hear Latino USA on KCBX. Latino USA is a Peabody Award-winning radio journal of news and culture from a Latino-Latina perspective. It chronicles how we're living, shaping, and changing the United States of America. Tune in for in-depth reporting, candid conversations, and fascinating stories. Join me for Latino USA Thursdays from 2 to 3 on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio.
And ahead today on our Thursday on KCBX, it is Latino USA following this program at 2. Then it's Fresh Air from 3 to 4 and Marketplace from 4 to 4:30. Right now, let's return to Mario Espinoza-Kulik and his guests on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Mario.
Thanks, Brad. Welcome back, everyone, to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik. Our guests today are Emma Eliezer Vega, Santa Barbara County Organizer for Californians for Pesticide Reform, and Gassi Salazar, Guadalupe resident and retired teacher from Pajaro Valley Unified School District from Watsonville. We've been discussing pesticide exposure and how it impacts communities on the Central Coast. To join in the discussion and ask any questions, please call 805-781-3875 or email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. Right before we left, Ken had brought up this really great point about different pesticides that were not just exposed to the ones in ag, but also domestic pesticides and things like that. Oh, my question for you, Emma, is what other issues related to these pesticides, like the domestic fumigations and things like that, can we learn about?
Yeah, so people forget that how easy you have access to these home pesticides. Like you said, Home Depot, Lowe's, they sell up Roundup, Termex. And then even like your local pest control people that come around and you spray your home regularly, right? Sometimes you forget that that spreads into the air and it's a bee toxin. You know, like the bees that pollinate here our community, that affects them. And then if you have pets, that affects your pets as well. And then a lot of the times when you're applying these pesticides at home, you don't think about how you are going to be exposed to it, right? Because a lot of the times we don't wear protective gear for it, like how they're supposed to wear protective gear for it. So a lot of times when you're at home and just maintaining your home, you don't even think about it. You just think that you're maintaining your home, but you forget how contaminated and the active ingredients and how nasty they could be to your overall health in the long future. Even with these home pesticides, you can have acute symptoms. But in the long run, if you apply them regularly and like, are you having like home maintenance for infestations regularly, you can have chronic symptoms. And you might not know if you didn't know, like if you live in this, I think this is more for communities that don't live near like agriculture fields, you're using pesticides, you know. It's not just the grocery store to your home, it's also the ones you're using your home to maintenance your home. And I feel like a lot of people forget about that, right? So let's think, just be more mindful and reading those ingredients and looking them up, like, hey, like, is this harmful to me, my children, or my pets? I think it's something that we should be more mindful of now.
Yeah, I agree. And on top of the domestic pesticides, there's also fumigants and something called organophosphates. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little bit also what those chemicals are and why CPR is prioritizing them?
Yeah, so fumigants are applied in huge amounts on berry fields, right? So strawberries, blackberries, blueberries, and they can drift for miles at harmful levels, which possibly lead to cancer and lung damages. So harmful miles means, so it could be applied... So there's a rule per the Healthy Schools Act where they can apply pesticides Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. But after Friday at 6 p.m., it's a free-for-all, so they can spray, right? But that doesn't – but the thing is with these harmful pesticides, the harmful effects happen 48 hours after application. And 48 to 72 hours after application, who is back on campus? The students and the teachers, right? And then organophosphates are brain-harming pesticides. They were invented by the Nazis and are banned as biological weapons on the battlefields, but are used in many cases in the ag fields near our schools today, which again, drift, right? People, and the thing with drift is you can't measure it. And especially here on the Central Coast, where are we near the ocean? The wind. So whether you think it's applied in one area, it doesn't stay in that area. It drifts for miles, right? So again, even if you don't live near this, we had research where drift has been detected 30 miles away from where it was applied. That's a lot. And that's just a measurable thing. So it could be going on for miles and miles and you would have never known. So what is a 30 to 50 mile radius is what, about an hour drive, mm-hmm. almost an hour, right? Yeah. So think about that the next time you see something be applied.
Right. Wow. That is really important information that I didn't even know that. And this makes me think about, like, what about our residents in our county, in our community? When, you know, we have Gassi here and has shared her experience. Are there other concerns or like what do residents share that their fears are, aside from what we've heard from our callers today?
Well, I think the biggest fear is I had a conversation with a fellow farm worker at an after school event. He told me he's worried about the moms there, the pregnant moms, how they're going to work and they're exposed to these fields, right? Because he says that sometimes there's residue on the left on the plants and it gets all over their hands, right? And a lot of the times they don't have access to properly wash their hands, right? So he talks about white residue. And he told me that he believes that there's no way that they're not ingesting this, whether it's smell or taste, through the mom to the baby, right? And that's what's his biggest worry about. And I think people forget that farm workers work through so many different conditions, and because of life happens, they have to continue working, right? Mm-hmm. And people forget about that babies, when they're affected by it, they're born at a lower rate. And then as they get older, it's IQ loss, autism, ADHD. Those are signs that they can experience. And I had a teacher tell me that a lot of their students have ADHD mm-hmm. and autism, mm-hmm. IQ loss, and then one big one, asthma.
Yeah.
Asthma, right? Because of how they were affected and exposed to at such a little age. I think another study that, if you wanted to do more research on, that's really good, is a Chamaco study that was done at UC Berkeley. If you wanted to look on more on your own, that can talk about a lot as well, because it follows the children throughout their adulthood. It's a really good study to follow up on.
For sure. And we did talk about drift a little bit, and I just wanted to say, you know, and remind folks that when families live near fields and work in like those fields, and we send our kids to schools surrounded by agricultural land, it makes me honestly believe they're more likely to experience these consequences of drift. Like you said, like you need it's 48 hours, but even then it drifts, and then they're already back before those 48 hours are ended. I want to turn to Cassie for a minute to talk about Guadalupe. You know, and that's our you're surrounded by agricultural land, but can you share a little bit about the communities that live and work there and how they're affected?
All I know is that I have a Zumba in my garage mm-hmm. In the morning at 9 o'clock, and I know some ladies that have severe problems, their eyes watering. And they have a lot of rheumatism. And then I find out that they're not that old. They're just a couple of years older than myself. And I think, wow, what's really going on? And a lot of these parents and people that I have met in the community, they shy away from going to our meetings for the pesticides, that kind of thing, because they think, well, this is my work. This is where I get my bread and everything. So I cannot say anything about what's going on. And I even have one of my friends is a teacher, and I would always ask her, what's going on in Bonita School? Why? And she just says, oh, no, well, the farmer, the landowners, they give us backpacks, and they give us, pencils and that kind of thing. And I think to myself, oh, well, because over there in Watsonville, we're very, very much involved with making sure that we talk to the farmers. We have big meetings where everybody comes in and pro and against. And at least there, we're really having these serious discussions about what's causing all this side effects.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that in Guadalupe that they are having much discussion, or as compared to Watsonville, or not?
Oh, Guadalupe is totally asleep, mm-hmm. and I'm glad that finally we have people that have come from other places and are now living in Guadalupe, and they're the ones who are bringing up, okay, I never had this, I never had that. Look what's happening mm-hmm. to my pets.
Mm-hmm.
Look what's happening. The doctors don't want to say what's really going on with your spots or that kind of stuff. So yeah. When you come from another places and you're now in Guadalupe, they're beginning to see some of the effects yeah. From the fields.
That's definitely a lot of feedback that we got from we had our first coalition meeting on March 18th. We had over 30 people in attending there, so it was a great turnout. And a lot of the conversations was that I moved here, whether they're retired or not, they moved there, and they're experiencing side effects that they never had before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just them, it's their pets, you know, and like with that comes higher bills, expensive medical bills, both for themselves and their pets. So I think, and I think this is a great thing to have new voices there, because I think it'll encourage the other community members that have lived there for generations to come out and say something. Because I know it's hard when you see something to say something, especially like how Cassie was saying, like if that's their livelihood. If they're, for example, if you're a teacher, sometimes you're restrained from what you can and cannot do. Or if you're a farm worker, you never know. The fear is that you to speak out, right? And even in right now with the situations we're going now, speaking out is a hard thing for them. So I think where I come in is I am uplifting voices and people that can say something to say something for people that cannot right now. And I think from the March 18th event that we had a really good turnout, and people, that's the feedback that we got, that people want to see change. So you wanted to volunteer too, we have future things for change coming up.
That's exciting news. I mean, I think that's the most important thing, and fits in line with what you were saying about the vision, about building people powers. The folks will become awakened to the issues the more that there are opportunities for them to speak up and share their experiences. Like we have from Nancy in Atascadero, who wants to share about ALS and pesticides. Hi, Nancy. You're on the line.
Well, thank you. I had the reason I have a question about the connection between ALS and pesticides is because there has been some evidence in the literature, scientific literature, that there might be a connection. And furthermore, I have a sister who died 4 months ago. She just turned 63. And she died of ALS, which is a brutal disease. And I know that my father used to spray our backyard, with pesticides. And I suspect it was DDT, because this was back in the 60s. And he wouldn't even close the windows up to the house, and I could smell it coming along the side of the house, and I would run to close my windows. But my little sister was 5, and I don't know what her exposure was. I moved away when she was about 5 or 6, but what do you know about the connection of ALS and pesticides in general?
So that research, from my knowledge, is very vague. It's really hard to do research to find people and people that want to fund research on pesticides. So at the moment, I would definitely have to follow up on you with that. We really only have the acute and chronic effects of it. Even now, to find evidence of the reproductive health of it, so baby to mother from exposure to pesticides, it's really hard to find research on that as well. But the more people that speak out and talk about their issues, like, hey, I suspect that this has a connection to it, that's how we get more research going, you know, because people are asking and more people are coming out and we can make connections to it. And again, that just comes again down to people power, that if you want something to be researched, we have to come together and fight for it.
I see. Very good. This program, this episode is very interesting. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
All righty.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And so, gosh, I feel conflicted because there's so much that we can talk about, right? I'm sure in the work that you do, you're also just like, there's so many directions to go in terms of pesticides. And I want to ask about like policies and protections and also children. Let's do that when we return after this short break. I'm Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Voice Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you recently joined us for today's Central Coast Voices and want to listen to the entire broadcast, you can. It'll be available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you'll find this show and many others to choose from. You can also find this episode and all our past shows by searching Central Coast Voices wherever you get your podcast and on your home devices, the speakers, the smart speakers. To stay up to date with Californians for pesticide control, you can follow their account on Instagram at @CPR_Santa Barbara County or visit their website at www.pesticidereform.org. Returning to our guests, we have with us today, we have Emma Eliezer Vega, Santa Barbara County Organizer for Californians for Pesticide Reform, and Casi Salazar, Guadalupe resident and retired teacher from Pajaro Valley Unified School District from Watsonville. We're nearing the end of our time together here, but there's a few things that I really want to get to, and that was the one. What policies are there in terms of, I know there's things that we need to reform and change, but are there any policies in place to protect, one, workers, and two, just everyday people, residents, and outside of, out of work?
So that's how I kind of want to go back to spray days, where we have that, right? It's a notification system that we have. It's not perfect, but we fought for it, right? Just last month, we celebrated 1 year of spray days. Mm-hmm. And so basically, spray days, you sign up with your phone number and email, and you can get, you can choose up to 10 addresses. So most people pick their work address or their home or their children's school, for example, and it will notify you of pesticides exposure that are going to be applied within a mile radius of that address that you put in, right? And that's something that we have that to help people know and be awareness of it. But there is not a lot of regulations or things implemented to protect people. That's why we're doing the tough work right now. One thing that we do have is we have quarter mile buffer zones for students. So that means pesticides can't be applied from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. a quarter mile from the school. And if you think about a quarter mile is not a lot. So that means in the quarter mile, a student could be on the playground. And if it's a quarter mile away, they could see, for example, helicopters applying pesticide, right? And that's where the drift comes in. So even though we have these things implemented to try and protect people, to bring awareness for them, it's not perfect. Like spray days, California uses over 100 pesticides, and spray days only notifies people up to 50 of them. So we're advocating larger school buffer zones, exact location, because that mile radius that it notifies you, it doesn't tell you the exact spot where it's going to be sprayed. It just gives you an estimate with that mile block that you on that website. So there's not a lot of regulations for it. From the farm workers that I have talked to, they tell me that sometimes they wear gear and sometimes they do not. It's up to the discretion of the owners and, you know, the mayordomo, their bosses. But a lot of the times there's no gear. And then after the application happens where it's safe for them to go back to work, they see the pesticide residue there and they continue to work. Mm-hmm. So in reality, there's not a lot of restrictions for them for protection. And the other issue is that the exposure that the state says is okay for someone to be exposed to is assumed that a farm worker works a 9-to-5 job. We know that's not true. Mm-hmm. Especially growing up, I know that's not true. That's not true. And it's for an adult body. But we know that child labor exists. As much as we don't want to talk about it, child labor exists. My dad was a product of that. I know it mm-hmm. exists. Mm-hmm. I have family members that were also more close family members are a product of that. I know people in high school that are still doing that right now, mm-hmm. right? And it's out of necessity, right? So the levels that the state says it's okay for you to be exposed to pesticides is for adult body that you assume that you work a 9-to-5 job. So think about that when these pesticides are being applied near schools and the drift is hitting the school mm-hmm. playgrounds, right? The school playgrounds, their little kids are touching their hands. They're putting their hands in their mouth, right? So the ingestion of the pesticides is not tested for that. People forget that. And I hate that these levels that the state says it's okay for you to be exposed to is, for an adult body, not for little bodies that are still fully adapting, you know, fully developing. So I think that's something that people should be more mad about, that the state says that that these levels that they say people are okay to be exposed to, it's not true. And I think more people need to be aware about it. So sadly, there's not a lot of protections for people, but that's why I'm here for them, to defend them, and to make sure to advocate for them, and for them to show them how to advocate for themselves, that we need more protections, both for teachers, students, and farm workers, that they deserve protections. And any community member that's surrounded by agriculture feels that we deserve to know what's being applied and how it's being applied, and to know the side effects of it, and then also to advocate, like, hey, maybe we want organic farming, you know, or surrounding schools. Yeah. Surrounding schools, because I think it's important that people know that the dangers of this. And I think a lot of people sometimes, with everyday life going on, people forget about the dangers that happen, that are going on 24/7.
Can you remind us about what the consequences are for pesticide exposure for young kids, like developing bodies?
It could be ADHD, IQ loss, or autism. From being exposed to, especially from pregnant mothers, them working in the fields, and exposure to it. And then acute for anybody that's been exposed to it. It could be red eyes, cough, itchy nose, skin lesions or skin reactions, vomiting or diarrhea or stomach aches. Those are side effects that anybody that has been exposed to it can experience within 24 to 48 hours.
Wow.
So there's more, but those are the most common ones that people that we have seen that are when they're exposed to it. Mm-hmm. And again, something I want people to remember is that if you smell it, you've been exposed to it. And I feel like something that's a lot of things that people forget, you know. Cassie told me that there's a teacher, I'm not going to say where the school and stuff, but for privacy reasons, but that they smell pesticides constantly, and they didn't know that it smells horrible, and that nothing's being done or being reported about it. So, and she didn't know until I told her that you just smelling it is exposure to pests. It's exposure. Mm-hmm. So that means the other teachers, the admin at that school, and the little kids that are at that school are being exposed to pesticides constantly.
And what can they do in terms of, like, if someone smells it and suspects that they've been exposed, or even if, like, the whole group, the students, mm-hmm. the admin, the teachers, the parents, everybody, how can they act?
So it's important to document. So if you saw, for example, if you saw the spraying happen, try to document landmarks, time, pictures, videos, whatever you can, to document it, so we can, you can go to your, the county ag commissioner per your county, and you can email them that information that you have, or you can fill out information as well. And I think teachers forget that. They themselves can send a report. It doesn't have to be the parent, because a lot of the times, again, parents of children of farm workers, they have a heart, like, it's a little bit more intimidating for them to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like as a teacher, if you can, or even your admin, for example, school principal saying, like, hey, I had multiple students smell this, multiple teachers smell this, and they send all this information in one email to the ag commissioner. They can ask for an investigation and the results of the investigation. And if they don't feel comfortable doing them themselves, I myself or any organizer that is for California's for Pesticide Reform, we can assist with that as well.
Wonderful. And what about the proactive kind of measures? Like, how, I know it's probably not, it's impossible to avoid being exposed to pesticides is what it sounds like, but what about for people who want to be proactive and limit their exposure or protect themselves and their families, what can they do?
Air filters in your home, closing your windows, washing yourself, your hands properly if you've been outside or touching gardening and stuff. If you're a farm worker, wearing your bandanas, you can wear bandanas as well. That's something that we provide as well. We provide bandanas to farm workers, or even just wearing an N95 mask. If you're walking around, I know some teachers, at least in the Guadalupe area, that are wearing masks because of the smell of pesticides.
And I'm so grateful to hear that advice, and wanted to ask for folks that are listening and maybe inspired to support this work or to become an organizer themselves, what's the first step that they can take?
I think definitely reaching out to me and having a one-on-one conversation. I really love having one-on-one conversations with people. And I would come to you. You let me know the time and place where you would like to meet up. And that's, we can establish a trust and communication system. And then from there, we can discuss how we would work together and how you would be able to support. And then you let me know what your troubles are right now. You know, you let me know what the issues that you're facing and how I can help you.
Wonderful. And I do want to ask if we've covered a lot of ground today, but is there anything that you'd like to share that we haven't had a chance to discuss, Cassie?
Well, for sure. I'm now the president of El Comité de Guadalupe, but we only take care of La Fiestas Patrias, the 16th of September, and we only join with the Juana's Club to do parades. We do nothing but social events, and I'm definitely so grateful that Emma is now here and we could now help work with her. But most of the people that will participate will be others that are not working in the fields.
That's okay. The more the merrier.
I'm really, I know we used to go visit Hidalgo, who was the commissioner over there in Watsonville, and I don't know when we could go visit the one who's in charge of Guadalupe, because I definitely would like to be able to talk to him and tell him about my experience and all of that. And I know that Mark laughed at me because I told him I'm a Salazar and I am part of Emiliano Zapata's descendancy. So
I appreciate that. Any closing words, Emma?
Yeah, I want to say that the bottom line, that this is a huge health concern, right? Pesticides do not discriminate whom they affect, and they drift for miles and can persist for many months or at harmful levels. And while they might not be impacting you now, they will in the future.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both for joining us today, Cassie and Emma. And thank you all for listening to us. If you would like to tune in next time for Central Coast Voices on Thursday, April 9th at 1 p.m., our host, Fred Monroe, and his guests from the Cuesta College Music and Audio Technology Certificate Program will be on the air. Central Coast Voices is co-produced by the show's host in collaboration with KCBX. We depend on folks like you to continue these programs, so please donate today or become a member with your monthly donation online at www.kcbx.org. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik. Thanks for joining us.